the memory, a vague memory, a pale, vague memory of something horrible and ugly will become a living reality. And they will have to account for a crime which they thought was completely forgotten. And that's why when Joseph identified himself to them, he nivaled upon us. They were frightened. Not so much frightened by the punishment they expected. No. Frightened by the discovery that they were wrong in their calculation. And that's why you read on that Shabbat, Ashleisha Pisha Yisrael, Valapo Velea Shivana. In the interpretation, with the interpretation of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that a tree cloud comes, they come, they lay Mikdal. Even for 23 years, no one mentioned Joseph's name. He was buried and forgotten. Even Jacob, I mean, did not say anything about it anymore. He grieved over it, but he didn't say a word. That such an event suddenly came to the fore and became, as I said, a living reality. That's who you read it. The Akhtere talks about crime, reward and punishment. That the man should never persuade himself, since such a long time passed, without being reminded of the crime, that he'll finally get away with it. Alright? What is next? So it doesn't appear as an edict, it's folks with them. It's more than that. It's principles of our faith. Next, what is the next edict? Another man used to say, seven pits are open for the good man, apparently, but he escapes. For the evil doer, there is only one into which he falls. So I think this was bad, but listen carefully. What did Shmuel say? Said Shmuel to Rabbi Yudah, this adage is alluded to in the verse. Sheva Yipel Tzadik Rikon, the righteous man will fall seven times and rise again. The adage did not speak about rising again. He'll escape the fall. He'll never fall into the pit, into the seven pit. He'll never fall in. No matter how many pits he'll come across. You'll never fall into the pit. Shmuel wrote the pasuk, "Kisheva yipol tzadik." Seven times will the righteous person fall. They come and you'll rise. According to the saying, the righteous person escapes the seven pits. He does not trip at all. God watches over him and guides him. Of course, this is what does it express? What principle? Hashgacha Pratis. The principle of Hashgacha Pratis came to expression in this aphorism. It is reminiscent of the Rambam's view in Hashgacha Pratis. That Ashgokop, that the latter is the foundation of Dvaitus Barishem. The closer a person is to the Almighty, the steadier and more encompassing the Ashgokop prophecy. It's so famous, my mother's opinion, in Meir HaLevuchim. But this folk saying does not say anything about the tzaddik tripping and falling. Stop right here. You'll never fall. You'll escape, yes. But sometimes you'll fall into a pit. You'll trip for what then? What happens then? What happens then? The evildoer, the sinner, falls into a pit. He cannot rise. Why cannot he rise? He has the physical strength. He has no courage to rise. One of the reasons which prevents, or the factors which prevent people from making a man and repenting is a lack of faith in themselves. They say it's too late. I'm not capable of performing such a way deed, of changing my life, of changing my identity, my personality. I remember certain person, very intelligent person, used to attend my shul in Boston. He was very much impressed by that. Now that I'm bragging to him, but I have to tell you the story. And he was actually impressed and he was moved. So I once asked him, tell me, I see that you cling to your hadith. Why can't you make the final step and introduce kashrut into your home? And then we'll begin to think about challenge. So he said, Rabbi, I would like to. I can't do that. Why? Because my family will declare me an insane. And I'll be locked up. And secondly, I don't belong into your society. In some way, I don't belong into your community. I live a different life. I have no courage. I'm not a hero. I have to die a sinner. So, for the tzaddik, the righteous person is not only protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu against falling into the pit, even if sometimes he loses the Hashgacha. The Hashgacha, refused to protect him. And he fell into the pit. He knows how to climb out of that pit. He has the inner strength, the courage. It's a heroic performance. It's a heroic performance. Because Shiva means to withdraw, to retreat. So I'm not speaking about physical motion. Physical is also true, but I'm speaking about spiritual motion. There are two movements. To advance is not cathartic. Because to advance means I want to stretch out my hand and I want to grab. To withdraw is always cathartic. Always purging, always quick. Because to withdraw means sacrificial action. And a matter of fact, the Chachma Kabbalah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by creating the world, brought a sacrifice. Creation of the world is a sacrificial act. Because simply, as little people without mind, say, deny his existence, his presence. Become a chobiyul in Hashem. It's an act of withdrawal on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, the same answer which I gave before I asked about sharpness is Shavuot HaTzamis. This is the question which Yenis Menuzila, he didn't understand the movement of withdrawal. What it is. And the greatest movement of withdrawal is performed by whom? By the Knesset Yisrael waiting for the King Messiah. They are propitious Yismamea. The Jew says it every day. But the Yismamea has got to be emphasized. Yismamea, slow in coming. He's very slow in coming. Should have been here 1900 years ago. He's slow in coming. What is that? Is it withdrawal or advance? Is this an aggressive attitude or an attitude of surrender to the higher will? And this is for a territory. Now let me finish. Midas Atzimtzum runs through the entire gamut of the several adages we just quoted and interpreted. Hence, what is Pshore, basically? As I told you, why is Pshore superior to the Indian? Why is Pshore superior to the Indian? For two reasons. One reason is that as far as Din is concerned, because the function of the Dayan is to mete out justice, but not to bring about peace. Because if you come in, if two parties come in before, appear before them, and one wins and the other one loses, no friendship is established between them. On the contrary, feelings of hate and bitterness are intensified. Pshore is only mishpat, but Pshore also does it with the Morris. Also, Pshore pursues Sholem as well. Peace. How is peace achieved? With Rebbe. Because both are amount of dollars. While the loser won something more important, something greater than a few dollars. What did he want? What did he win? Peace of mind. Sense of serenity. A sense of calmness. And I'll use the Hebrew expression. Shalmas anefesh, peace of mind. What's more important, shalmas anefesh? Or a few dollars, in Hebrew, $10,000. One in limited amount, my concepts of dollars are very limited. To me, $100,000 is a million. Anyway, no matter how much you won, you won just dollars. The loser lost a dollar, but won something which is more precious than dollars. Namely what? Serenity. A sense of innocence. A sense of reconciliation with the Almighty. I cannot be peace of mind if managing conflict with the Almighty. If one finds peace of mind, a certain equilibrium, a mental equilibrium, certain balance in his personality, this is a sign that there is complete reconciliation between him and the Almighty. And that's exactly what the loser wins. He wins the Almighty. As long as he had the dollars, the ill-gotten dollars in his pocket, God was not his friend. At that moment he went to court and acted in compliance with the verdict, with the judicial decision by the Dayan. He lost a few dollars, but he won the friendship and love of the Almighty. Call on everybody, particularly the loser. Your very long may came on the shoulder. You sleep well the following night. What principle comes to expression? What principle? Very important. Again, in order to understand Tshuva. In order to understand Tshuva, and in general to understand the Jew, is very important to know that. Many people, as a matter of fact, nowadays, whose minds are poisoned by wrong philosophies, try to deny it with regard to the Jew. But still, I believe in Atavah Hatana. We have something which is unique of the Jew, something which is unique of the Jew. I can't say there are exceptions to the rule. I cannot say of every Jew, but of the majority of the Jews. I mean, we suffer from self-hate, as usual. It's completely unfounded. What principle came to expression in the in this adage? However lives the court, the house of the courthouse, where it was the case, and the dying was so strict that he did not give him any reprieve, and he removed the coat from him, because he didn't trust him. So instead of insulting the dying, should dance and sing a song and go home happy, in a happy mood. Well, why is it so characteristic of the Jew? And again, upon this idea, the whole structure of Tshuva is made. The Ram. No. Don't quote me the Moran Babas. No. Moran Babas, no. If you had quoted the Rambam to me, pertaining to the Moran Babas, I would accept. The Rambam is elaborated in Tshuva. If you had quoted the Rambam, I would accept it. But the Gemara Basra per se, you simply don't know pshat how Mitzvah Lishmei Divrei Chachamim influences the validity of Get Meusa. The Rambam you know very well, I wrote about it, I mentioned it many times in my Tshuva Rosh. The Rambam says, the Gemara is an Adam, it's not his idea, it's not his invention. The Sefer Mishal Yisroel Afesh Tshuva. Every Jew will finally repent. He'll reconcile himself with God. Willingly, he'll do Tshuva. He may postpone it for a while, he may delay it, but finally every Jew will amen, and change his life style and become a doctor. Voyu ki yaveyo lecho advorim o'ele advocho da'akolo v'shachto ad anisham lepeh. Every Jew will make amend and will come back. What the Maimer is about, it did express this, the following. The conscience of the Jew is sensitive to sin. The sinner feels willingly polluted and unclean, and consciously or unconsciously, sin bothers the mind of the sinner. The Jewish reaction to sin is traumatic, it's a trauma. Jew is not neutral to sin. He never reconciles himself with transgression. Deep down in his soul, the Jew wants to be good and noble. The chete is a pseudo-personality. Which replaced the genuine, true personality of the Jew for a certain time. But there is something in the sinner, with some secret aspect of his personality, which has never been affected by sin. We say every morning in our prayers, "Latan Neshama Shel Satabi Teori." How can it be Teor if I sinned so many times? I did not make amends for my sins. I did not change my lifestyle. How can I say? The answer is Neshama Shel Satabi. The soul which you implanted in me, the genuine soul, the genuine I, the genuine person remains for you. Chet does not pollute the whole personality, but the part of it. And usually the upper layers of the personality, the inner layers of the personality are not touched, nor are they affected by Chet. And that's how tshuva is made possible. If the whole personality had been polluted, if the whole personality had been involved in that, and completely, contaminated and corrupted, so then chet, then I would say ex nihilo nil fit. There is no yesh ma'ayin. A human being cannot create yesh ma'ayin. How can the chete, the sinner, who is unclean from head to toe, start a life from the scratch? There is no beginning. Tshuva is possible because reshoyim meleim chavoteis, reshoyim keyam keyam nikosh. Deep down the soul of the wicked person, there is a desire to be good and noble, and there is longing for the Almighty. And that desire, sometimes unknown to the sinner himself, drives the sinner, pulls him to the Almighty. So actually, when the wicked person comes before the judge and agrees to his verdict, he responds to the inner call, to the call of his inner personality. And when the dying imposes it, a sentence upon him, and he loses the claw, his claw. Of course, I mean, the pseudo personality is indignant and excited and resents the dying. The verdict by the diet. But the I, the true, genuine I personality, even in the recesses of the sinner, is thankful to the diet. So it says in Yashatea, "Gam kol olam yoveh mekeimam bishalom." This is the foundation, basically, of the whole philosophy of tshuva. Men will be compelled to the tshuva, will be impelled rather, to do tshuva, because somebody from within will drag him to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Rambam said, "The Seifom shall Yisroel as a tshuva." Why? Why was the Rambam so sure about it? Because there is, we are not sinners from head to toe. There is something good in us, something noble. Of course, covered with layers of ashes. Not everything has been extinguished in our personality. There is some little candle burning in his personality. And exactly that secret flame which is burning in our recesses we'll finally illuminate our way of life. And this is Rishoyim Aleim Charotis. Rishoyim Kayom Nidosh. By Yigir Shom Meimov, Meimov, Refes Fatid. Even though at present, the Rosh is contaminated completely. Just Regis, Remes, Refes Fatid. But inwardly, the Rosh is restless. He searches for peace of mind. And the Adayin who made him do it, has done a big favor to him. Has actually fulfilled his hidden desire, which he was afraid to spell out. Exactly. The Rambam, in explaining the validity of Get Meuse, developed the same theory which I developed now. That's what I told you. This is a Rambam mitzvah Shmir Din Rachamim in every sinner wants to do it. Even though he himself is not aware of his inner Zohar. Alright? Next. What comes next? What comes next? The Rosia to one, we used to say when a woman slumbers, the working basket drops off her head. Said Shmuel to Rav Yehuda, this is alluded to in the verse, but Tautayim Yimacham Koren. By slothfulness, the rafters sinking. It is a very simple, practical advice. When you notice a leak in the ceiling, don't fix it immediately. Otherwise, the whole house will finally fall apart. It means carelessness pertaining to details may lead to complete disaster. If Shmuel found it, deemed it necessary to refer this adage, this metaphor, possible in Kehelet. Apparently, he discovered in it more than just the practical advice. More than that. What did Shmuel say? It's very characteristic of man. Yeah, it refers to Chatur. Correct. If you are negligent, sometimes to Tavir Okalo, to a pickle of a minute, you'll finally get involved in the commission of very severe crime. Yes, but I believe there is something else involved. Man who was cursed by the Almighty, who when he sinned and ate of the tree of knowledge, the central element of the curse, the most important element of the curse, centered about what? Revolved about what? About what? If you just try to recall the few lines in Bereishis pertaining to the curse, what did the curse consist of? What was the most important element? Yeah. Why do you emphasize Lechem? Yes. Correct. Yes. I believe that the central motif in the curse was centered around the enmity or hostility which nature displays quite often, the environment displays quite often, quite frequently, to a vis-a-vis man.
acquisition of goods.
For instance, it is a difficult enterprise. The soul, as you mentioned, quite often does not respond to man's efforts. This will entail grow instead of food. It seems, of course, in Paul shall men eat of the fruit of the land. But all that is a result of hostility on the part of the soil, which in Tanakh means not only soil, it means nature in general, the environment. On the part of nature, vis-à-vis men. As a matter of fact, the modern problem, the problem of modern man, the main problem of modern man, revolves about what? About the same type of hostility that the environment shows. I mean, the slaves is every man. The environment is hostile sometimes simply because man doesn't know how to handle the environment. The environment is hostile because man polluted the environment. But there is a certain opposition on the part of nature to men's efforts to control nature. Do I have to give you examples? I don't like to give you examples, but it will illustrate my point. Take, for instance, Rahman Islam, degenerative diseases, particularly the most dreadful disease of all, cancer. And how doctors keep on telling us, actually, you want protection, go for a checkup every month, every 6 months, if you are above 40, if you are under 40, once a year, if you are above 65, once in 2 months, once a month. Because what might happen? That normal tissue might go berserk and begin to grow in a manner which science cannot control. And basically, this is the enmity, hostility of nature, the environment, vis-à-vis man. And so it's true in every area of human endeavor. Nature opposes man. And man must be always on the alert. If you ask me what kind of a being is man, what is the destiny of man? To keep vigil, to be vigilant, to always be on the alert. Not to relax. Not to fall asleep. Because if he sees those off, so nature can play a trick of him. Like the woman who dozed off and found her basket on the ground, not on her head. And the same is true with regard to what? With regard to Lord. With regard to our Jewish destiny. What is required of the Jew? Vigilance as far as the outside world is concerned. Because the outside world is not always friendly to us. Quite often was hostile, and also vis-à-vis ourselves. It's very easy to sleep, very easy to tweet. It's very easy to get lost and to waste everything, time and money. It's very easy to waste our own destiny. Not my mother's calls Cain and Levine Chayle Shalmoki, the army of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In what respect are we the army of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu? because we are always on the alert. And that's what Shmuel said. Ma'atzotayim yinachem tochem. Negligence, tasachadas, relaxation, self-confidence may lead to catastrophe and to disaster. Shmuel didn't want to frighten anybody, but this is a wise rule. And the more complex our society becomes, the more advanced civilization is, and the more control man has over nature, the greater his responsibility, and the more alertness is required. What else? What do you have? Another man used to say, the man on whom I relied upon shook his fist at me. Again, Shmuel said to Rabbi Yudeh, this is alluded in the verse, Yisrael Hashem Atach today, but what is the end of the verse? So what did Shmuel? First of all, we don't understand what this edict told us. What's actually the meaning of that saying? The man on whom I relied shook his fist against me. It means the man deceived him. All right, he relied upon him, and he discovered he was not his friend, but his enemy. When Shmuel also said, Yishleim Yashab Atachtime, betrayed me. I mean, we have many psukim, or Agar Shifta Bodom, or Agar Shifta Hashem, or Hashem Miftache. I think that they've been given a lot of Hashem, it's sure. I believe that here again a certain principle which is of great importance and relevance to us tonight, I mean to us in America and to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, or to the Jewish communities throughout the world. Very important. Judaism, the Torah has told us many times that man may lie, may be a liar, but your mouth is a chavzik of Adam Kedem. We know also from our experience that sometimes people are deceitful and false. Nothing new in all that. What's important in this saying is the following. Who shook his fist and who lifted his heel against me? The most trusted friend, the man upon whom I rely, and the emphasis of the Gavre de Rochitz Nebei, Ish Shabbatachti, what's the Havi the Prophet? Will you remember the word Rechitzne? Where does Rechitzne occur? Interesting is, Judaism basically, Yahadus wants us to respect our fellow man. Yahadus had a very positive opinion of man. To believe in man's integrity and in man's honesty. Yahadus doesn't want people to be suspicious. Acheshit v'ksherim leike. Not to hurl charges and not to look upon fellow men as liars, as people who are deceitful. The whole institution, how do I know that? That the others is a
national of the Catholics.
Correct. The institution of Aedes. The institution of Aedes, of two witnesses, whose testimony, if they are cross-examined properly, their testimony cannot be contradicted by anybody. Great email. This shows that you have his head with the confidence in man. Otherwise, I mean, those institutional figures, the source of the finest source of evidence, couldn't simply exist. It is supported by our positive approach to man. The same is true of Shmuel. He takes an oath. Why not say the perjurer and he perjured himself? The answer is the Jew took an oath. An oath, apparently. However, what Yahadus warned us against is absolutization of men, to approach men in terms of absoluteness. For instance, I don't know, I mean, but I always feel hurt when I hear, for instance, I can say, when I hear the following statement, I have faith in him. I understand when I say about men, I have confidence in him, that I understand. And confidence, we were told by the Torah, we should have him. I could perhaps tolerate another synonym and apply to man. I have trust in him. In my opinion, it's also too much. But certainly one cannot have faith in man. To have faith is an attribute which is exclusively applicable to the Almighty. Faith, the connotation of faith is absoluteness. The promise made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the Almighty, is absolutely true. It can never be reversed, it can never be contradicted. It will be fulfilled, sooner or later, but will be fulfilled. While the promise of men, even of the finest, of the most honest one, of the best, contains an element. But our relationship to such a promise must contain an element of doubt. Without it, if we have absolute faith in man, we are idol worshippers. Absolute faith in man is idolatry. We don't have to imagine idolatry. When the prophets speak of idolatry, how abominable it is, they had in mind exclusively, I mean, some figures, some statues made of metal, of gold, and silver. Those idols are not as dangerous and as evil as the greatest of all idols, the most powerful of all idols, man himself. When we have too much confidence in man, and when we have faith in him, we become idol worshippers. Interesting is the following, I wouldn't have said it. Modern world, and it goes back to the time of the Renaissance, worships man. Both the Marxist countries in the East, as well as the democratic countries in the West. There's a common denominator. Faith in man, he'll finally accomplish his job, and he'll bring happiness, absolute happiness. It will solve all our problems. This is common to both, to the Marxist philosophy and the democratic philosophy of Western people. What is the punishment for such an approach to man? I was young at that time, but I felt it was wrong. We exaggerated and our relationship to a certain person, I'll tell you the name,
right away, what shall I say, an idolatrous one. And I have in mind President Roosevelt. The relationship of the Jew to him brought up an idolatry. Because if it hadn't been an idolatrous relationship, we would have saved hundreds and perhaps millions of Jews from the concentration, as well as camps and the crematoria. The fact that he didn't exert any pressure on him. The State Department used to call in the Jewish leadership and tell them not to circulate this story about the extermination of the Jews in crematoria. Because this will impair the war effort. I don't understand why. Was it supposed to impair the war effort? And the Jewish leadership accepted it. Somebody told me, a layman told me, that in our Al-Chet Yom Kippur, another Al-Chet should be included. Namely, Al-Chet Shechatonu, Velapi Achenu Be'Europe, Be'ischanu Me'leinu V'lei Shomanu. It's quite correct. And I'm not blaming anybody, I'm blaming myself. Well, I didn't act like Mordecai did. When he heard the news about the edict issued by Haman and Ahasuerus. Why didn't I do it? Why didn't the same here by Isaac Zokok Delamor? Why didn't I shout and yell and cry? Why didn't I tear my clothes? Why didn't I awaken on in the Jewish leadership? I'm not blaming anybody. You know what the punishment is? What is the reason for that? Because we were idol worshippers. And let me tell you, Roosevelt was a great president. If not Roosevelt, quite possible that Yitzhak Mashmei would have won the war, if not for Roosevelt. And his arsenal and his open support he gave to England before America got involved in the war. Roosevelt did a lot, I mean, for the liberalization of America. Actually, if not for Roosevelt, I mean, labor wouldn't have gained the positions it did gain later. Roosevelt did a lot for the world and America, but he failed miserably in regard to us. So let me tell you, if Roosevelt had been president, the state of Israel would have never come into existence. Truman was the messenger which Dash Gocher selected to be president at that time. Why did Roosevelt disappoint us? Why did Roosevelt disappoint us? Why? Because we worshipped it. Had we been critical of him, had we had the courage to tell him, no, it's not correct what you say. I told him there was no reason to be afraid of, to tell it to him. It's not correct what you say. I mean, saving Jews from the crematoria will not interfere with the war effort. Had we had the courage, hadn't we acted like cowards, he would have acted differently with regard to the problem of saving the Jews in Eastern Europe, and also with regard to the problem of Eretz Israel. Because we worshipped him, because we exaggerated, instead of having confidence in him, we had faith in him, he disappointed us. This is the punishment for worshipping idols. After a certain time, I find out that they did not fulfill what they promised to do. Vesartem, lavadetem, levim, achayim, shtachvisim lehem. What will happen? You serve the heavens, you worship the soil, nature. Rotzar ha-soshomayim v'liyemoto, v'adomo v'sitin ha-sivuro. Zavre d'chitzede, the person on whom I relied, as though I had bitochen, whom I worshipped, shook his fist against. Hadn't I exaggerated in my love for him and my surrender to him? Had I been critical of him, he would have never changed. he would have remained my friend. Now, finally, you'll come to the last adage. What's the last adage? Another used to say, when love was strong, we could have made our bed upon the blade of a sword. Now that the love has grown weak and weakened, a reed has a bed of 60 cubits is not large enough. What did Shmuel say? This is alluded in the verse, I will meet thee and speak with thee from above to the ark cover. This was at the very beginning in the desert. When they have forsaken God, it is written by Isaiah, the heavens are my throne and the earth is my footstool. Where is the home that you may build for me? Here is not only a principle involved, more than that. What's involved here? Not only principle. I would say mystery. A mystery from the Yisof and Tzimtzum, which actually was so beautifully, even though he met his opposition for that, so beautifully formulated and explained by the Baal HaTanya, by the Rav, by the founder of Chabad. I mean, the middle part of the Tanya, Shah Yichud Ben Muda, is concerned with this problem only. Sod Midas HaTimtum. The mystery of Timtum comes to expression in this adage. God is infinite. He embraces the universe. Who became a Shalom? The Elam became it. The universe is in him. He is not in the universe. He embraces the universe. There's above and beyond the universe. How can a sanctuary be built for him? How can he abide on the cover of the kaperes, on the cover of the ark? The Midrash says, when the Almighty told Moshe, Vosu imigdosh, v'shachanti b'seichom, let him make a sanctuary for me, and I'll abide in it, nival meishe, meishe got frightened. Omar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omar, in Hashemayim u'shmei Hashemayim le'ichal kelukam. The heavens and the heavens, and beyond the heavens, and even the heavens of the heavens, cannot contain thee. Af habayis ve'a shabonisi. How can I say this is the home of God? This is the house of God? Omar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu meishe. Le'i k'shem sh'ato re'ishat'ato cheishe v'anicheishe. Is not correct. I have a different approach. We promise in Ishmael Hashemayim, Leichal Kuluni, even the universe cannot contain me. We promise on Yered or Mitzamtim Eshchenosi, I descend from infinity, from transcendence, into a world of finitude, and I contract myself, Kaviyoko. I limit myself, I contract myself. Mitzamtim Esatme, Metech Amo Ramo. In the square cubic. So the Likutei Torah says, with regard to the Midrash, Avril Likutei Torah is in the Meir, or Nachamei, so I don't remember exactly. The Zobazo Shamaiti Miti Meiri, a Magid Mezrich. The only time I believe he mentions his name in Likutei Torah. A Magid Mezrich, Shekan Nizbayar Soda Tzimtzum. The mystery of Tzimtzum. Of self-contraction, self-limitation, of withdrawal, of retreat on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes to expression in Rasul and Nidash, Peshachanti Bishach. Of course, I mean, it's a
According to the Chachmei HaKabbalah, an Achsidus Midas HaTzimtzum is responsible for Bria Soilo, for the creation of the world. In order to make, I'm just speaking in metaphors, but I can't help myself. We don't have the precise terms for that. It's something which is above and beyond our intellect. In order to make space for a finite world, to emerge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochu contracted himself and left empty space in which a finite reality was born. If not for Midas HaTzimtzum, the world would have never been created. Because simply mathematically the world contains an absurd. Because finitude plus infinity, if you have such an equation in there, finitude plus infinity equals infinity. So it means there is nothing else but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only the Midas HaTzimtzum made it possible for a finite, limited world to exist beside HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As a matter of fact, from the viewpoint of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the world doesn't exist. It's basically from our viewpoint that we say there is a world. Basically, if you ask me what is the main principle, what is the central virtue of Jewish morality, of Jewish ethics? What is the central virtue? Of course, we have to walk in the ways of God. But there are many ways. What does Yahadus, basically, the Torah, require of the Jew? What does it require of the Jew? Correct. Yeah, but the Jew has a certain method, a certain way, a certain approach that the Jew should apply to the world, to himself, to fellow men, to his fellow Jews. But what? What does Yahadus require? Midas HaTzimtzum. To be capable of contracting himself, of limiting himself, and retreating, and withdrawing. Whatever you give me, any kind of mitzvah, I'll classify it easily under Midas HaTzimtzum. No, I challenge you. Tzitzis, correct. What is the purpose of tzitzis? Continue. Continue quoting, no? It means if the eye, if it is tempting, if something is very tempting, and the eye is attracted, and the heart desire, what does Jesus tell you? Withdraw, retreat. Next. Don't understand what Midas HaTzimtzum is. And let me tell you also Tzimtzum retreat. Retreat from what? The Rambam says in second peric, that no matter what kind of a Jew or what kind of a person one is strong or weak, healthy, or a person with pain, rich or poor, or intelligent, or dumb, he is supposed to what? To study Torah. For a person who is in pain, to study Torah is very difficult. So what is involved in that? Midas HaTzimtzum, withdrawal. Withdrawal from what? Not from tempting eyes and a desiring heart. What's wrong? From pain. The next. Correct. Correct. What do rationalists say about sadness? What do philosophers say about sadness?
What direction are we? Say about Japanese. No, you ask the questions, not so.
You answer.
What? No, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. What has the Rambam told it and the Rashi, sharpness among the mitzvah shune shayim, our enemies and the Satan poke fun and criticize. What difference is made? Whether it's Mool or Linian. What is required of the Jew? What's required of the Jew? What's required of the Jew? To surrender his logical judgment to a higher will and to accept from him this particular commandment. I don't wear sharpness. So somebody, let me see, a philosopher, should come over to me. The rationalist, say, after all, you're a logical person. With a good intellect. Explain to me what's the reason, what's the motive for it. What will I tell him? It is no reason here. I suspend my logical judgment. I suspend my logical judgment completely. I just accept the judgment which is above and beyond me. I surrender and I submit. My dignity, actually, as a rational being who is entitled to an explanation for everything which is requested to do, I surrender that dignity to the higher will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Next! Samachtu Hagecho, I'll give you. Just don't help me out. I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a story of my own experience. I mean, it's very serious. My wife died, to whom I was very attached. My wife died, Tani Sester. It was a Thursday. She was buried on Friday. And she was buried with her, and I also buried part of myself with her. Part of myself went into the grave with her. And I came home and I took off my shoes and I sat down on the floor and I began to observe the 7 days of mourning. And this observance was a relief to me. It had therapeutic, redemptive value for me. The fact that I can cry and sit on the floor. The fact that I can observe all the laws of Averis, that was not a trauma, on the contrary. It has redemptive cathartic venom. It purged. It cleansed me. Of an ugly, ugly grief which began to encroach upon me. I felt that I lose my mind. And suddenly, Purim came in. Purim arrived. And according to Armine, the Migma Rabo, I had to get up from the Shiva. I mean, from the Shiva continued. Purim is being counted. But I had to get up from Shiva, put on my shoes, rub myself a little bit. Purim. Did I have the strength to do that? No. Getting up was worse than sitting down. And if there is a miserable poem which I spent, or a holiday which I spent, that was the poem. Not because I couldn't observe a village. And you ask some master of Hagech, I'll give you an example. I witnessed it. Somebody died Erev Pesach. He was buried late Pesach, Erev Pesach afternoon. They all had a chance, to take off his shoes and to cut three and to sit for half an hour on the floor. And suddenly, there is a command. What is the command? Forget the grief. Forget the person whom you just buried. Forget the person you just buried. Forget everything. Forget the fact you are lonely. The house is empty, dark. No one walks around, no one speaks, no one addresses any remark to me, any words to me. Dress up and give the wonders. And tonight you'll say, Shabbat HaBonu Mikolom, HaBonu Mikoloshim, and you'll complete Shechiyonu V'Kimonu V'Gionu L'Azman HaZeh. weil wir doch wieder schon genommen und wir gehen jetzt an den Seinen in den Freien, wie die Hände alleine an sehen, lachen bei Matze und Mora. Ist der ein Jungen, can a human being do that?
But the Torah believed that the Jew can do it. He can tear an arm and tear an off emotion.
As if he were turning on a faucet and turning off the faucet. Turning on the water or turning off the water.
Isn't that symptom?
Nothing is drawing from money. Nothing is drawing from you that money. Nothing is drawing from what shall I say, from dignity of a rational being to understand what is expected of him to do, but a withdrawal from himself. But the Torah believed that a human being can do that, particularly a Jew is capable of doing it. This is Midas HaTzimtzum. More. It's a legitimate question. It should be answered.
I get many shalas with regard to period of radio.
From the question of Mamuch. And now I must say, I'm a machna. And this is, believe me, it requires inner strength on the part of the woman to listen to my decision. And I know many young women who could have held a job, who wanted to continue their education, who wanted to to lead a free, enjoyable life, listen to my advice, and gave up many things. Isn't that Midas HaTzimtzum? Isn't that a withdrawal on the part of the husband, but mainly on the part of the woman? Isn't that a sacrificial act of Tzimtzum? What else? Adelion, I'll give you an example, but just example me. I hate schnapps, I can't drink it. And I'm pulling my try to drink it. What else? What do you mean, Chesed? His doctor sometimes, the Hasidim tells a story about a certain rabbi, I don't remember who he is, that he used to bend his head against the wall whenever he had to give his doctor. He was such a miser that everything was against it. Boy, there was Midas HaTzimtzum, his daughter. Many times when I begin to my pocket, I have to practice Midas HaTzimtzum. I don't want to give, but still, to give, even if it is painful. It means it's doctor means to give, and the sharper the pain, the greater is mitzvah's doctor. Charity is measured by the pain it causes. What? Just a moment. By answering those questions, you'll understand what I understand by symptom. I'll tell you a story about Louis Vesey. I'll tell you a story. Midas HaTzimtzum. It was the first year my father came to Warsaw. It was 1922, I believe, 1923. There was a shortage of a slave, particularly good slave. And my father spent a fortune, a little fortune. He didn't have too much. To buy an Essek Mehuda, beautiful Essek. And when I brought the Essek, my father treated the Essek as it were a baby, firstborn baby. So much tenderness and love. Ah, beautiful Essek. And he put it into a case, a silver case, in the buffet. The first night, it's a story, it's not a legend. The first night, my older sister Shalamis, who lives in Boston now, and she went, I don't know what she in general, she likes to poke her nose in metals, which is the one. So apparently she inspected the asteroid and dropped it, and the pitten broke off. My father did not say a word.
who said she became hysterical, said, don't be hysterical. You didn't want to do that. It was a mistake, that's all. Oh, there's a many shining things that I ask without a pit in his also kosher. Is it withdrawal? Is that symptom or not? To spend the $5, $10, no. But to contain himself. This is left of withdrawal par excellence. And this is not a Chassidish Maizvah, it's a true story. Schaefer, just a moment. Did you ever read in random the message of Schaefer? What Schaefer tells us? I mean, did anybody read the message of Schaefer? In random, with a shiva, what is the message? If you read the message of Schaefer in random, you wouldn't ask the question. Tzimtzum. Withdrawal, retreat. The end of Fuller. If you want me, I can find it. But it's late. You have enough. Yes. No, of course. Tzimtzum is a cathartic experience. What do you call it? Self. Basically, symptom. I mean, there are two movements, actually. There is a more...